Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is a special episode of Washington Today during this week's Republican National Convention. This podcast is our post-convention coverage with analysis on the day's events.
Our campaign 2020 coverage continues. C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of politics.
The 42nd Republican National Convention is now in the books. Tomorrow, the president hitting the road with a campaign stop in New Hampshire. Vice President Trump also on the campaign trail. He is in Michigan and Minnesota, and a spectacular fireworks display tonight at the conclusion of the ceremony and the events in the South Lawn at the White House. And for the next 30 minutes, some highlights from the convention, including some sharp attacks against the Democrats by the president, outlining his plans if he is reelected to a second term. Let's get to the reaction in just a moment. We'll also be talking to Bob Cusack. He is the editor-in-chief of The Hill newspaper and TheHill.com. We want to check in with two members of Congress. French Hill is a Republican joining us from Little Rock, Arkansas. I want to begin, though, tonight with Representative Debbie Dingell. She is in Dearborn, Michigan, Democrat. You watched the speeches last night and tonight. What's your overall observation?
Well, you know, I try not to be negative, but this week has been quite something for me. I think that the distortion effects, the lack of mentioning a number of things, and quite frankly, I'm very concerned about how we continue to try to divide this country with fear and hatred. I think as you see the fact checkers on a number of points in the speeches tonight, as we've seen all week, you're going to find many of the claims made are not true.
And Representative French Hill, you watched the speech from your home. How did it play out?
Well, Steve, thanks for having me. Good to be with my friend Debbie Dingell as well. I thought President Trump delivered this week through the RNC two key issues. First, he talked about the promises he made back in 2016 and that he's delivered on those promises in many ways. And I think that's the example of a business person rather than a politician, somebody who just makes a list, a to-do list, and gets it done. And secondly, he contrasted what he would do over the next 4 years in regard to tax, regulatory policy, foreign policy, energy policy, with the positions that Joe Biden and Senator Harris have taken and outlined last week in their convention.
There have been a lot of talk about COVID-19, the president addressing it tonight. Where are we in terms of a vaccine? Because the president seemed to indicate that we're closer than many of the experts believe we are.
Well, one thing that we've noted in Congress is the FDA and the CDC and the administration working collaboratively with Congress and in the medical community internationally for rapidly approving therapeutics that can make it easier and faster to treat Americans and others that have COVID-19, as well as set up Operation Warp Speed that's taking congressionally appropriated money and having a competition for getting the vaccine approved as quickly as possible through human phase 3 trials. It started out with over 100 possibilities, and we're down now to 6 or 7 that are going to make that cut and go to human trials. I think that's a remarkable achievement in such a short period of time.
Congresswoman Dingell, as you heard the president tonight, he went after a key demographic that helped him in 2016, blue-collar Democrats, saying that Joe Biden has betrayed those blue-collar Democrats during his 47 years in Washington. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I do want to say I'm so tired and I apologize to everybody, but it's been a long week. It is great to be on with French, who is a good friend, and we are two people that respect each other and work with each other. And I wanted to say one thing on COVID before I go to the next thing. I wish people would wear masks. To see that many people in one place wearing no masks just makes me scared. And I do worry about COVID in this country, and I want to see this country come back to normal. So I want to say that. What I say is that I think that this is going to be a competitive fall. I think that many of the workers, the working men and women that are in my district, This is what I would say. A third of those workers are going to vote for President Trump again. Those that voted for Hillary Clinton are going to vote for Joe Biden. And there are a lot of people that know that in 2008, Joe Biden was part of saving this industry, that he cared about, that there were people, Republicans, who said, let them go bankrupt, that they want to see manufacturing brought to this country. We passed a tax bill that incentivized people to continue to locate overseas. Now, the president said tonight he wants to bring it back. I'm going to work with anybody that's going to bring those jobs back from overseas and those supply chains. But people haven't seen some of the delivery and some of those things that have happened. I have two steel plants in my district, one which is going to close and one which closed part of it. We've lost jobs just in the last 6 months. We saw General Motors close plants. So I think there's a lot of skepticism here about promises that are being made here, and they want to see people return manufacturing to this country. They want to stop hearing promises, and they want to see the delivery. And I think they know that Joe Biden helped save this industry in 2008.
And as you both know, we have seen a lot at the White House over the last 4 nights. I want to get your reaction to both of you from critics who said that the Republicans and the president crossed the line by having this partisan political event on the South Lawn at the White House. Representative French Hill, there is the Hatch Act. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, I think the pandemic caused both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party to scramble to come up with a strategy for producing a great convention that could connect with voters across the country. The president, I'm sure, reviewed very carefully how to use the outdoor setting at the White House legally. And of course, cabinet officials and the top level of the White House are not covered by the Hatch Act. They're typically exempt from the Hatch Act in some ways. And I'm sure the Republican National Committee paid for those locations and all the expenses associated with it. But I understand the criticism, but I think the pandemic, we need to take that into account when it comes to Secret Service protection and being outdoors and try to balance that out for both parties as they struggle to put on their conventions this year.
Representative Debbie Dingell, your response.
I think we crossed a line. I mean, I can hear some of the concern even in French's voice. We did a convention that was not crossing line. French and I have to live by, we have official and we have political. And we know when not to cross the line. We have House Administration Committee. We have ethics officers that make sure that we are abiding by the law. The White House is the official residence of the President of the United States and has not been used in certainly my memory in the last century for a political event like this. And I also think across the line when we had a Secretary of State, we had a Republican Senator, Senator Vander Veen from Michigan, who said politics stops at water's edge. We had Secretary of State, Republican and Democrat, have not participated in political conventions of either party. I think we've crossed lines. I think the White House was used as a political drop all week. I found it offensive and wrong.
And Congressman Hill, about 1,500 people on the South Lawn at the White House, clearly they were very close together. Very few had masks. Do you worry about coronavirus and potentially if somebody in the audience tonight gets sick as a result of being on the South Lawn?
Well, I do share the view of Debbie Dingell that crowds who cannot socially distance should have masks on, even at an outdoor event if they can't be socially distant. So I certainly would have liked to have seen more masks at the event this evening, but I believe that, again, that's something all of us need to remind our fellow citizens that being socially distant, wearing a mask, following the hygiene standards is how we're going to prevent the spread of COVID-19 and get back to what we all want to, which is a fully normal business and personal life.
We heard from your home state Senator Tom Cotton, your reaction to his speech tonight, and do you expect him to run in 2024?
I'll let you ask him the question about 2024. But I share his thoughts tonight. He made the statement that he felt that after the rebuilding of the Defense Department and the defense strategy by President Trump, getting out of the Iranian deal, resetting our relations in the Middle East, getting rid of ISIS, rebuilding relations with Israel that had been really not good under the Obama administration, ending President Obama and Vice President Biden's appeasement of a lot of bad actors around the world. Senator Cotton offered the idea that we are safer today as a result of the actions of the last four years of the Trump administration. I share that view.
And Representative Debbie Dingell, as you know, the president, very critical of Joe Biden, a constant reference tonight and over the last four nights to his 47 years in public service. Is that going to be one of the narratives that we'll hear from the Republicans aimed at your party's nominee?
I think that probably is. I think we saw some of the themes that we're going to hear all fall. I'm not sure that that's one of the issues that's really going to get traction. I think that there's some other issues that we do need to take very seriously. I am getting tired of Democrats being portrayed as supporting a number of things like rioting and looting, which we are not. We need to address some of the very real issues that we have in this country. But I'm going to tell you very clearly, we all love that American flag. We are Americans first, not Democrats or Republicans. And I am getting tired of people saying that we as Democrats don't love that flag. We don't love our country. We love our Constitution. We value and respect the pillars, the fundamental pillars of our Constitution, the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, freedom of the press, here I am, and due process. And I'm going to be one of the people that's just going to take it head on and not let people get away with painting those kind of pictures.
But Congresswoman, as you know, law and order is one of the themes that we heard from the president tonight, and we're seeing the events unfold over the last two or three nights in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Does that play into the Republican narrative?
You know what I want to say to you? I want to say to you that we have to support their law enforcement are very important in all of our communities. But do you understand that if you are a black man in America, you are treated differently than a white man? That we saw a 17-year-old white young man walking down the street with a gun that was not stopped, that had shot and murdered two people. That's on video. And that if that had been a young black man with a gun, I'm not sure he'd be alive today. So we got to address those issues. We've watched George Floyd be murdered. There's an issue, but that it's not either or. We need a leader that's not going to put kerosene on the fire, but is going to help squelch those fires, have difficult, uncomfortable conversations, but bring communities together. And I'll tell you, in my small communities, my police chiefs have been there with the kids talking about these issues. They're not afraid to have the tough conversations. And I want a leader that's not going to encourage these flames, but is going to try to put them out and bring people together.
Congressman French Hill, your response to Representative Debbie Dingell.
Well, Debbie Dingell and I are very good friends, and she knows that her police chief in Detroit, Michigan, has certainly been outspoken against this movement of defunding the police and not standing up for our men and women in uniform. Every day, 800,000 people get up in this country, put on a blue uniform, kiss their families goodbye, and go try to protect our communities. They deserve our thanks, our respect, and they deserve the Speaker of the House to respect them as well and not be silent by all the anarchy around our country. And Speaker Pelosi has been quite silent, more silent than she should be. With that said, I'll say that there are a number of solid, bipartisan things that we could do that are supportive of Donald Trump's executive order on police reform, President Obama's 2015 21st Century Policing Report, the Heritage Foundation's recommendations, and the outstanding work by Tim Scott, our great senator from South Carolina. All these things have at their heart high-quality policing best practices. But final comment, if we want good policing, if we want fair policing, if we want equal justice under the law, if we want to get bad cops out of the force and have the kind of community that we can be proud of in community policing, then that should be dealt with by mayors and city councils. And if you're in a city with bad policing or policing you don't care for, the place to take that up and do that reform is right at home, close to the people in that locality.
The hour is late. A final question for both of you as the fall campaign now officially gets underway, the convention's in the history books. Representative Debbie Dingell, what's going to happen over the next 65 days? How do you think this campaign is going to unfold?
Well, I want it to be a civil campaign. I don't have great hopes. I need to go back to something. French and I are great friends, and we do work together. And by the way, we try to find solutions and find problems. Joe Biden does not support defunding the police, and he has made that very clear. And I want to say that on this, and I agree that we need to be doing this at the local level, but we need leaders that are going to encourage and support. And what I want, I think we're going to see a really brutal fall. And I think we're going to see a lot of things that are said that aren't factual. And I'm going to be out there trying to lead, and I'm going to be correcting the facts when they're not correct. And I think everybody needs to understand how important this election is, and that the right to vote is the most important responsibility we have as citizens of this country. So we all need to engage, and we're going to be working hard to get every American to participate in this year's election.
Congressman Hill, will it be a brutal campaign, as Debbie Dingell just indicated?
Well, for 244 years, I haven't seen a presidential campaign that wasn't brutal. When I read my history and the campaigns that I've lived through in my life, in private business and in politics, they're always tough. So I don't expect this one to be any different. But I expect President Trump to be reelected because I believe he's the best choice to rebuild our economy, to renew and restore our way of life, and to bring health back to this country, and to make sure that we all are aware of the great opportunities that are in this beautiful country of America. So I urge all the listeners and participants on C-SPAN to support our president for reelection.
French Hill, Republican from Arkansas, joining us from Little Rock. Debbie Dingell, Democrat from Michigan, from her home in Dearborn. To both of you, members of the House of Representatives, we thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Get some sleep.
In just a moment, we have much more to go, so thank you very much. We'll be talking to Bob Cusack of The Hill newspaper and TheHill.com. He's the editor-in-chief. But first, the moment in which the president said it's official, he accepts the nomination.
My fellow Americans, tonight, with a heart full of gratitude and boundless optimism, I profoundly accept this nomination for President of the United States.
That moment from the South Lawn at the White House, not in Charlotte, North Carolina, or in Jacksonville, Florida, two of the other options originally under consideration. And for analysis, we turn to Bob Cusack of The Hill newspaper. Your overall sense of the speech tonight, the theatrics, the content, and the president's style?
Well, Steve, certainly the visuals were quite stunning. And of course, critics say it was illegal because it was held at the White House. But we've never seen a convention like this one, or even the Democratic one. I think that President Trump had to make this a choice instead of a referendum. We've been talking to a lot of Republicans about that. Trump has been dominating the headlines this spring, but obviously the spring was not a good time for him, and his numbers took a hit. I think this week the Republicans did go after Biden. They have made it more of a choice. We're just getting started. As you said, we got a couple more months to go. I think it's going to be fascinating where we go from here. As far as the speech, I thought it got off to a pretty strong start. It was long, it was 70 minutes, and it lost some energy toward the end. But then you had the fireworks and the show, and Trump is the ultimate showman. And certainly they put on quite a display at the White House tonight. And listen, I think, you know, when you look at this election, you know, the dominating elections of Ronald Reagan in 1984, they're just not going to happen. This country is very divided, and there are certain states where Joe Biden can certainly count on, and there are certain states that President Trump can count on. And it's going to be it's going to be decided in the battlegrounds. This is not going to be a blowout, I think, either way.
As you mentioned, a 70-minute speech. So if there's a trivia question, who had the longest Republican convention speech? That was Donald Trump in 2016 when he went 75 minutes. But in tonight's speech, he laid bare his criticism of Joe Biden. Again, a constant reference to his 47 years in Washington as a U.S. senator and as vice president. And he had this to say.
At no time before have voters faced a clearer choice between two parties, two visions, two philosophies, or two agendas. This election will decide whether we save the American dream or whether we allow a socialist agenda to demolish our cherished destiny.
From tonight's final night of the Republican National Convention held on the South Lawn at the White House and at the Mellon Auditorium. And Bob Cusack, there's also two economies. You have the NASDAQ and the Dow reaching new records, and yet we still have record unemployment. So how is that going to play out in this election?
I think it depends on what happens, certainly, with COVID-19 over the next couple months. I mean, the numbers, health numbers are not great, but there has been signs of optimism recently. So I think it depends on where we are in maybe 4 to 6 weeks. And if the country's really getting on top of this issue, then I think that is going to certainly help the president. But you mentioned, you know, we have a record unemployment going on right now, certainly as fast as it went up from the lows of earlier this year. And you have the stock market doing very well. And I think the stock market doing well has actually hurt the chances that Congress is going to pass another virus package because Republicans don't want to spend another $2 to $3 trillion when the market is doing well. So it's just a very unusual time where you have this pandemic and the United States in crisis, and yet the markets are doing quite well.
And just one side note, because we covered the event, you talked to Congressman Tom Emmers. He is, of course, the head of the Congressional Campaign Committee for the Republicans, indicating that he really thinks Republicans could regain control of the House this year.
Yeah, that's quite a bold prediction. And you always want to have the donations keeping coming in, because most of the political world is looking at the White House and the Senate, which, you know, you can argue both are kind of toss-ups. The House is really not a toss-up. Democrats are favored to control the House next year. I think the question is, who's going to pick up seats? I think if you look at history, you're not going to see massive waves in a presidential election, especially now with the country divided. I think you're going to see either Democrats or Republicans pick up single-digit seats in the House. I think the chances of the House flipping are pretty remote at this time.
And Trump campaign officials indicating that they think the president can get between 12% to 15% of the African-American vote. George W. Bush received about 8% or 9%. And this is the president tonight going after that vote.
And to bring prosperity to our forgotten inner cities, we worked hard to pass historic criminal justice reform, prison reform, opportunity zones, and long-term funding of historically black colleges and universities. And before the China virus came in, produced the best unemployment numbers for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and Asian Americans ever recorded. And I say very modestly that I have done more for the African American community than any president since Abraham Lincoln, our first Republican president.
Bob Cusack, when you heard that line, what was your reaction?
Well, it's interesting, Steve. You know, day one of the Republican convention was all about the base. And the campaign has tried to reach out, and certainly featuring a lot of women, African Americans. Because, you know, their numbers, certainly with suburban women, are not good right now. Their numbers with independents compared to 2016 are not that great. So anytime, obviously, the Trump campaign knows they're not going to win the African-American vote. They're not going to win the Latino vote. But the bigger share that you can get, I mean, that's significant. So I think this is a theme you're going to see. Some Republicans have been frustrated. The president has always courted his base, which is very, very strong, and not tried to do more to reach out to independents. Maybe we'll see that over the next couple of months.
Well, to reinforce that base, the story of Alice Johnson. She is from Memphis, Tennessee, the mother of five, convicted in the mid-1990s, involved in a drug cartel in Tennessee, sentenced to life in prison through Kim Kardashian and through Ivanka Trump, and then at the action by the president. Her sentence was commuted back in 2018. She's now working for those who are in prisons across the country. She told her story tonight. It was a powerful story. Here's part of what she told the audience.
The nearly 22 years I spent in prison were not wasted. God had a purpose and a plan for my life. I was not delayed or denied. I was destined for such a time as this. I pray that you will not just hear this message, but that you will be inspired by my story and your compassion will lead you to take action for those who are forgotten.
Bob Cusack, I'm not sure if you heard her speech earlier, but she does have a compelling story.
A very compelling story, and it's kind of the playbook of what an incumbent president will do is you have speakers on, and you remind people what you did in the first term. People have short memories, including the media. So you've got to spell out, number one, what you did, what you accomplished, who you pardoned, and also what you're going to do in a potential second term, which the president kind of wasn't doing earlier this year. I think he did it tonight where he laid out, you know, kind of what anti-regulations, that he's going to bring the economy back after this COVID nightmare, and a few other things that he's trying to say, listen, I can build this economy back. And, you know, if you look at the polls, certainly no one is blaming President Trump for COVID-19 coming here. But his handling of COVID-19, his numbers aren't good. He's got to turn those numbers around in order to win a second term.
We were live back in 2015 when Donald Trump came down the escalator at Trump Tower and announced his candidacy. And then the moment tonight as the president and the first lady were descending from the White House down the stairs and then to the podium, very reminiscent of what we saw 5 years ago.
Yes, the visuals are very important for President Trump. And when Trump came down that escalator in 2015, very few people thought he would win the Republican nomination. He shocked everybody and he won, really kind of wire to wire, and then had a convention that was controversial and Ted Cruz gave a controversial speech. But then a lot of people and the pundits thought, well, listen, he may have won the nomination, but he can't beat Hillary Clinton. And then he did. So you can never count out Donald Trump in any type of race or deal. He has defied the critics before. You know, he is facing an uphill battle. Certainly, you have to call him the underdog right now. But he's been the underdog before 4 years ago, and he won.
And we know that Congress is looking into the speech by the Secretary of State, the use of the White House tonight. But do Democrats on Capitol Hill have any leverage, or will this issue fade away?
I think they'll investigate it, certainly, and a lot of people saying there are various, many Hatch Act violations here. I think that's kind of inside baseball, honestly, Steve, and I don't think that's going to resonate much beyond the Beltway. So I think there'll be investigations. Will it lead to anything significant? No. Do I think that voters are going to vote based upon possible Hatch Act violations? I don't think it matters. What Trump wanted is what he got. He got the visuals tonight of the White House as a backdrop and big fireworks afterward.
And as you said, making this a choice election as the president went after Democrats, saying that the Democrats would take away your rights. Let's watch.
If the left gains power, they will demolish the suburbs, confiscate your guns, and appoint justices who will wipe away your Second Amendment and other constitutional freedoms. Biden is a Trojan horse for socialism. If Joe Biden doesn't have the strength to stand up to wild-eyed Marxists like Bernie Sanders and his fellow radicals, and there are many, we see them all the time, it's incredible, actually, then how is he ever going to stand up for you? He's not.
And Bob Cusack, we've been hearing from a number of Republicans all week that the Democratic nominee Joe Biden is going to be a Trojan horse for the leftist agenda.
Yeah, that is something you're going to hear because the Trump campaign, I think, has struggled to label Joe Biden. But now that Trojan horse, they like that. And certainly Joe Biden would be under enormous pressure from the left to do some things that they want. And they basically, and Bernie Sanders is one of them, saying, OK, yes, I will help Joe Biden get elected. Then he will be the most progressive president ever. So I do think that's an effective strategy. How effective, we'll see. But I do think you're going to keep hearing that number, 47 years, that Joe Biden's been in public service. He's kind of the insider. And also he's going to have to pay off the left. I mean, Steve, you think about it, like there's both sides are certainly using fear. Democrats last week saying you've got to fear a second term of President Trump. And then Trump and his allies saying you've got to fear what Joe Biden would do. He's not a centrist. He's radical. And they've got to, I think, continue that message for it to resonate. in the polls.
Well, to that point, this is what Senator Mitch McConnell in a pre-taped speech from his home state of Kentucky. He, of course, is in a re-election battle of his own, echoing the theme that you just mentioned.
They want to tax your job out of existence and then send you a government check for unemployment. They want to tell you what kind of car you can drive, what sources of information are credible, and even how many hamburgers you can eat. They want to defund the police and take away your Second Amendment rights. They want free health care for illegal immigrants, yet they offer no protection at all for unborn Americans.
Bob Cusack?
McConnell has had a very good relationship with Joe Biden over the years. They've struck deals in the Obama administration when McConnell didn't want to deal with President Obama. Joe Biden came up to Capitol Hill and they struck deals on fiscal matters. So he's not going after Joe Biden personally. He's just going after policies here. And certainly Mitch McConnell is seizing on the power of progressives. And there's no doubt about it. We've seen it in some primaries where Democratic incumbents have lost to progressives. The left is very powerful. Bernie Sanders nearly won the nomination in 2016, and basically, you know, he finished second as well in 2020, and he's going to be pushing the envelope. So that's going to be the strategy and I think Joe Biden's going to have to do more media interviews to clearly say what he's going to do in a first term should he win. We really haven't gotten those answers yet.
Well, and I know we've been talking about this the last couple of nights, but last week we saw and heard from the president on multiple occasions during the Democratic convention. And this week we heard from Senator Kamala Harris. We covered her speech earlier today. But essentially, Joe Biden's been doing virtual events, fundraisers. He did do two interviews today. And so far, no scheduled campaign appearances.
Yeah, and it's interesting that, you know, after the 2016 election, and it was a relatively recent interview, Hillary Clinton told Howard Stern of XM Sirius Radio that she regretted her media strategy, that she was too careful. And, you know, she was. Donald Trump was doing interviews after interviews. And Hillary Clinton was not. She was doing one from, you know, here and there. And President Trump was getting a lot of free media from various organizations. And listen, I mean, Joe Biden right now is kind of following that type of strategy where he's not doing a lot of interviews. And I think they would be wise. I'm a little biased here, but be wise to do interviews with The Hill and C-SPAN and others.
We approve that message. So we'd love to sit down with both of the candidates. I want to go to thehill.com and get a final point from you, because obviously coronavirus is going to loom large in this campaign over the next 60 plus days. The headline is the CDC testing guidance is sparking some backlash. So what's the story and how is this going to play out on the campaign trail?
Well, it goes to testing, and CDC walked back a policy change from earlier this week that really said, OK, we don't need to basically test asymptomatic people. Dr. Fauci was not, who is obviously a major player and has been dealing with diseases and pandemics and studying them, he was not involved in that decision. So there was a bit of an uproar on it because, again, you know, the recent, even though we've been testing a lot of people, you see with therapeutics and other treatments that the numbers are actually getting better in a number of states, not all, certainly. So CDC had to walk this back. And it raises the question, Steve, of political influence from the White House on scientists. And when that happens and when there are questions about that, there's always going to be a big controversy.
So 2 weeks of conventions, the Democrats last week, the Republicans this week. Your overall assessment, how did the Democrats do? And how did the Republicans do?
I honestly think they both did well. I think they both had decent conventions. I certainly think Republicans are feeling a lot better than they felt in the spring when COVID-19 had really completely shut everything down. And it was a very dark time and the stock market was tanking. I think Democrats did have a good convention. I think Joe Biden gave a very good speech. Trump gave the speech that he wanted to tonight. But this is just the beginning. It's the next 60-some-odd days, next 2 months. It's going to be a brawl. And, you know, there are some states that Donald Trump, you know, is looking a little shaky right now, that he's got to win. Like, he's got to win Florida. If he doesn't win Florida, That's basically it. And the campaign knows that. And we've talked to people who said, yeah, they acknowledge Florida is a must win. And again, that's a state that struggled with COVID-19 for a while, and now it's getting a little bit better. So I do think we're going to see some nastiness on the campaign trail over the next couple of months. And of course, we're all looking for the debates, the three presidential and the one VP. They could be crucial of who wins on November 3rd.
One final point, because Joe Biden is still ahead nationally. He did not get a bounce last week. Do you think that we'll see a bounce for the president this week?
I think you're going to see somewhat of a bounce. I don't think you're going to see a huge bounce, because a lot of people that you talk to, you know, there are very few people who are kind of undecided. I mean, the polls show you can see, depending on the poll, 10 to 15% of people who could be had either way, and they're not really fully decided. So I don't think you'll see a big bounce. But I do think Republicans will get a bounce from this for a number of reasons. The stock market and COVID-19, some good developments there. But I don't think it'll be huge. And I do think the debates are going to be more important than these conventions.
And you wonder if the last 2 weeks will change conventions moving forward.
Yes. No, I think so. As far as the, you know, the roll call where the various states did it, I think the Democrats did a great job of that, of doing visuals of not just on the convention floor, which is kind of boring. I think this is going to change how things are done. Some things worked. Obviously, you know, both sides had some technical issues at times. But I think conventions going forward could be different, a lot different than they were pre-COVID.
A very long night. Bob Cusack, editor-in-chief of The Hill newspaper and TheHill.com, also part of Hill TV. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Steve.
And our thanks to the editorial and technical staff here at C-SPAN that have put together our coverage over the last 2 weeks, including our live, uninterrupted, gavel-to-gavel coverage of the two conventions. And in case you missed any of it, it's all available online anytime. You can check out the Republican convention at cspan.org/RNC. We thank you for watching.